This is Justice Radio. This episode is the second in a three-part series about surviving harm and the relationship between accountability, healing, and justice in relation to our criminal legal system. I'm Catherine Besteman, an abolitionist educator at Colby College and the coordinator of the Freedom in Captivity Initiative.
And I'm Linda Small, Executive Director of Reentry Sisters, an organization that supports restorative reentry for women returning from prison. Today, our guests are Priya Nair and Dolphy Jordan. Priya and Dolphy are two facilitators with Collective Justice who work on the DAPS, that's Dialogue and Accountability Processes team. Priya has a background in sexual assault and domestic violence advocacy and community accountability processes. Dolphy has a background in work around young people and the criminal legal system. He's formerly incarcerated and facilitates Collective Justice's formerly incarcerated healing circles, along with the Dialogue and Accountability Processes team. They are currently facilitating a DAP with a community-based group where sexual assault happened among its members. Priya and Dolphy, thank you for joining us. Let's start by asking you about the work that you do with Collective Justice and what brought you to this work. Priya, let's start with you.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having us. To share a little bit about Dialogue and Accountability Process, DAPS, also known as DAPS, provide an opportunity for people who have survived serious harm or lost loved ones to violence to engage with the people responsible for that harm, and often includes a face-to-face dialogue between the parties. DAPS can be facilitated when a responsible party is incarcerated or in a community-based settings in the aftermath of violence, when the criminal legal system is not involved. And a little bit to actually say why we do DAPS. You know, they are fundamentally, DAPS are a voluntary, in-depth and formal attempt to respond to a specific harm that involves a facilitation team, support teams, and a designed plan for accountability that is co-created by the facilitators and the survivors and the people or the person who caused the harm or violence.
Thanks, Priya. I want to follow up with a couple of questions. How do people find their way to you? So how does somebody choose to elect to go through this process? And what does this process give them? That's the first question. And I want to also ask you personally, how did you come to be doing this work? So sort of a two-part question. And you can take whichever one you want to go with first.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think Dolphy can also share a little bit more about how people come to us, but we are very involved in the community. And so a lot of times our members are also, part of different communities and groups. So people know about us through community. So people might come to us just because they know who we are in community. So, and we know this process. And so that is one way. And a little bit about, to answer your second question about a little bit about how I come to this work is I come to this work as a survivor of child sexual abuse, domestic violence, and sexual assault. And knowing that criminal legal system was not something that was an option or not something that was available for me as an immigrant and also as someone who was new to this country, I was, calling the cops was not something that was, that was even an option for me. So, and at the same time, most of the mainstream DV organizations was kind of offering me, was telling, why don't you just leave? That was also not an option as someone who did not have any network or connection or financial situation or any of those being available or even to actually speak, English in a way in which people would even understand me. So all those kind of came into, that was not something that was an option. So, and it was around that time, I came across API Chaya, which is an anti-violence organization that based in Seattle that primarily supports API South Asian and API women and survivors of domestic sexual violence and as well as human trafficking. And I got connected with them and I learned They were really helpful and supportive, and like actually meeting me where I was at and offering, what is the safety and support I needed. And also through them, I actually also went through their National Helpers Program and was able to meet with this incredible, amazing transformative justice organizer, advocate, practitioner named Kiyomi Fujikawa. She did a training on transformative justice, and that is when I was like, this is exactly what I want. This is exactly what I need. Like, how do we have that? How do we, how, why is this not an option for survivors? So that is what, brought me to this work of actually transformative justice actually takes accountability very seriously, as well as survivors' needs also very seriously. So that is what my interest was. And I wanted to kind of be a part of like creating that for myself and also for more survivors.
Thank you, Priya, and thank you for sharing about your own personal background, as well as what you found from this process of responding to harm through transformative justice, as opposed to through sort of what is often considered to be the mainstream tools that we offer people who are experiencing abuse or violence. Can I just ask you one more question before we turn to Dolphy? And that is, for our listeners who might not be familiar with the term transformative justice, can you offer what does that mean to you, and what's significant about transformative justice? What does it do?
I see transformative justice as responding to harm or violence without causing more harm or violence. So for example, carceral system or like any kind of legal system is punishment, and that perpetuates harm. And as we know, from incredible Mariam Kaba, she talks about how fundamentally transformative justice asserts that carcerality doesn't attend to the root causes of violence and harm, so it's not a good strategy. So I really, so what transformative justice does is actually goes to the root causes of violence and harm. Like, why does, and most root causes of most violence and harm is oppression, right? So actually, how do we actually get to the root cause that enables so much harm and violence to happen. And that's what I was interested in.
Thank you so much for that, Priya. And we might get a little bit deeper into root causes later on in the show. But right now, I'd like to hear from Dolphy. Can you please tell us a little bit about your background and your work with Collective Justice?
Hi. Yeah, absolutely. Again, my name is Dolphy Jordan. And it was a long road for me to get to Collective Justice, and I'll spare you all the details, but I grew up in a very physically and mentally abusive home, and suffered a lot of domestic violence, and ended up going to prison as a juvenile at the age of 16 for causing very serious harm. And throughout my prison sentence, also experienced harm, caused harm. And it took me a long while to realize that this is not doing anything for me. It's not really addressing what got me here. It's not really doing anything to change my behavior. It's definitely not keeping me safe. And never really had an opportunity for accountability. You know, all of those things were in the back of my mind. And I also kept seeing people get out and come back. And I also kept seeing young people come into the system. And it planted a seed to where I knew once I realized I was going to be released from prison that I wanted to do something about it. And that kind of set me on a path of education. I felt like education was going to be the key to finding out some of these answers and giving me the skills to do something about them. And so once I was released from prison in 2010, I ended up serving 21 years, and I went straight to college and started working for community-based organizations here in Seattle. But I always felt like something was missing. Like, I was doing the work and working with adults, working with young people, but always in relationship with police or the Department of Corrections. And so there was always something else, a different agenda than what I was hoping to accomplish. and creating, you know, safer communities and promoting education and building relationships, you know, which when I came to collective justice, you know, I was looking for what was restorative, what was transformative, and I just didn't have the language at the time. And Martina Cartman, who was one of the founders of Collective Justice, and I were friends and had done some community work together, invited me to a facilitator training, and which I attended. And let me back up for a minute. During the pandemic, I went back to college to finish my degree and also needed an internship. So it just kind of worked out in that way. And so I started going to collective justice staff meetings. I was able to attend a really intensive facilitator training, and which also led to another training with an organization out of the Bay Area called Impact Justice, which led to doing some work with the youth diversion program. And one of the other things that happened during the pandemic is collective justice really started going inside the prisons here in Washington State. And that's where the Healing Education for Accountability and Liberation Circles started, was inside WSR, which is the Washington State Reformatory, and was co-created with the Concerned Lifers organization and the Black Prisoners Caucus, as well as community members. And then when the pandemic hit with COVID, all prison programs shut down. And so what emerged from that was a need in the community, where we were able to form several different circles, one of which was a formerly incarcerated person circle, which was essentially a men's group of folks who had been to prison. And so I co-facilitate that with a couple other folks from Collective Justice, as well as a part of the Dialogue and Accountability Process team, which is where Priya and I co-facilitate different processes of harm that happen in the community.
Thanks, Dolphine. This is Justice Radio, and today your hosts Catherine Besteman and Linda Small are talking with Priya Nair and Dolphy Jordan of Collective Justice in Seattle about their work with that organization, their work with transformative and restorative justice.
So Dolphy, I want to pick up a little bit on that thread that you were just talking about, particularly going through the system at such a young age and recognizing that it was not a way for you to be safe or a way for you to be held accountable, and no space for healing for anybody, right? For those who have survived harm or committed harm. So can you tell us a little bit about how you came to that decision about figuring out what was missing, and if that was restorative justice, what does that provide, that being connected to carceral systems that always have some underlying motivation makes ink a break from that, that's different from that?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. It's a lot. It's a lot. And my journey was long, and I didn't, from going to prison at that age, none of my issues were addressed. And I was a scared little kid going into this system that I didn't have much experience in, with no concept of time. And so when I was sentenced and told to remain silent, anything I say can and will be used against you in the court of law, you know, so it was just deny, where I ended up pleading guilty anyway, but it was just because of a threat of a longer sentence. And there was just no opportunity or no conversation or questions about why or what happened or any of those things. And it didn't give me an opportunity to really process the trauma I went through, the trauma I created, the harm I created, not only to specific people, but to families, to the community. And it, you know, and that has always bothered me for a really long time. And throughout my sentence, there was no programming. It was just very structured rules. And if you break the rules, you'll be punished. And that was the form of accountability that is our current system. And there was no alternatives being offered. And so that didn't sit well with me, and always was searching for more,
That was beautifully articulated. Thank you. What I'm hearing between both of your own personal journeys is a real commitment to dedication to and search for accountability and safety in the wake of harm. How do people who are experiencing harm actually find safety, and does our criminal legal system provide it? And Priya, you've said for you, no. And Dolphy, how do you effectively take accountability in some way that's actually meaningful and restorative through our criminal legal system? And what you're telling us is you couldn't. There was no way for you to do that. And that's what led both of you to this pathway towards becoming practitioners in restorative and transformative justice. And I think that's incredibly powerful to think about what our criminal legal system is not providing, that we say we want, right? That we want safety and we want accountability. And yet we have put in place a system that denies those things. And so Priya, I want to come back to you on the safety question. You explained to us why calling the cops, turning to the criminal legal system was not an option for you as an immigrant woman who felt fairly alone with some linguistic barriers and a sense that the cultural support structure that you could have used or needed was not available to you through the criminal legal system until you found Apichaya, which was able to give you what you needed. And so I'm wondering if you can talk with us about how can you address gender-based violence without going through the criminal legal system in a way that's effective to keep people who are experiencing abuse safe?
Right. Wow, I wish I had a one-sentence answer for that. But yeah, I think it starts small, right? It starts with actually building, how do we build accountable communities? You know, that is the basic, you know, the question is, right? How do we create a culture where taking accountability does not mean, you know, the most terrible thing that can happen to you? Like, for example, if you take accountability to, you know, sexual abuse or assault, or to, you know, different forms of harm, you know, like, first, yes, you need to live in a community where that is not okay, obviously, and also you are actually supported to make sure that that harm does not continue. And so really interested in thinking about what conditions make accountability possible, and also what conditions make you know, sexual harassment, abuse, and domestic violence also impossible. Like, you know, what are the conditions? How do we build that? How do we create that? And I feel like transformative justice, you know, is like so integral in kind of building those pieces, right? For example, some of the things that we, you know, do is like, how do we build support community with like ways in which realizing what are the different ways in which they're also complicit in different forms of harm and violence, right? And also, how do you respond when you know that actually your friend is actually, you know, causing harm to someone that you care about, but you may not say anything because you don't want to cause trouble, or you don't want to, it's like their individual problem, or it's not me for me to kind of interfere, or, you know? So I think we kind of absolve of our responsibilities, or like of our, you know, like we give our power over to the state or we give our power over to the cops when they are actually not helpful and cannot help us, right? So how do we build those skills back up again in our community and our collective? And, you know, part of what collective justice heal, you know, like what Dolphy was talking about does is actually build that capacity, you know, in our community to, you know, have those hard conversations with our loved ones when they cause harm. You know, how do we support ourselves with accountability? Like, how do we take self-accountability when things happen? How do we support our loved ones with accountability? How do we actually live in more in alignment with our values? If we say, you know, harm and violence is not the, you know, the world that we want to live in, how do we actually practice that? How do we, you know, what do we create? So I think those, it is like a bigger long-term solution and like long-term answer. And it's not like, you know, it's like a practice that you need to be engaging in every single day in order for us to build that world that we want.
That's beautiful. Thank you for addressing the question so thoughtfully. Dolphy, I want to turn to you and ask if you can give us some examples of how do you actually do that? As somebody who, you know, came through a household that, as you describe it, characterized by abuse, experienced a lot of abuse, perpetrated abuse, learned to take accountability, desired to take accountability for that, found avenues to do that, and is now using that lifetime of experience to build communities of accountability. But can we get into sort of the nuts and bolts of it a little bit? Like how actually, what does that look like in practice?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that as Priya was describing it, and you asked a question earlier around transformative justice and getting at the root causes of those things. And I think the best way, or one of the ways, is through education. And one of the things we do, one of many things we do, we approach this through trying to understand and talking about the conditions that have created some of these systems in place. And a big one is patriarchy and how men or boys are raised and conditioned to act and behave in certain ways. And one of the statuses of becoming a man is objectifying women. And, you know, so when we get to start having dialogue and conversations around what does that really look like and how does that translate into behavior, and you start really looking at how you show up in the world and the impact you have. And what that looks like, we start really having amazing conversations and in circle, you know, with a bunch of formerly incarcerated men, some of whom have done decades in prison and used to be very violent, you know, and start having conversations of what it really means to be a man and have integrity and show up in a way that's not harmful is really transformative.
Yeah, I love that, Dolphy, sort of redefining masculinity. I wonder if you might tell us just a little, relate that little to your own personal story. So if you envision yourself just before, you know, you're a young teen, before you become incarcerated, what could have your community done for you to set you on a different path? And then actually be part of this community and skip that horrifying 21 years of being incarcerated. What was the intervention that you needed?
Oh, you know, I think about this all the time, and I probably give different answers all the time because it's just so complicated, you know, like at which point, what's the starting point? And it's really conditioning started, you know, before birth, right? When the gender reveal, right? Which color, you know, which toys are you playing with as a kid and the language associated with those toys versus, you know, boys and girls. And it really, it's, you're surrounded by it, whether with cartoons, TV, magazines, music, all of those things, and your friends in school, like who's the most popular kid? Like who's the best football player? Who's the king and queen of prom, and you receive all this messaging. So it's just Such a hard question to answer. And then also, what neighborhoods are you growing up in? You know, what resources are available to you? And it's just such a wide range of reasons. And I think for me, you know, it was such a broken home. We were so transient. Like, I went to 16 different schools by the ninth grade, and really didn't was never able to develop that skill of what deep relationship looks like. So friendships, you know, I never really, once I got to know somebody, I was moved or went to foster care or over here. And so at first it really hurt, like, oh my God, how am I going to see you again? And then it just became normal. And then those feelings shut down, and never really having any great positive adult male role models. I didn't have any mentorship, you know, so all of those things. And then I ended up in special ed classes, you know, I was classified as special ed classes, and the stigma attached to that, that I told myself, my own narrative is that I wasn't good enough, that I was dumb, and I didn't matter. And so I didn't have much value placed in me as a child. And that just really stopped me from caring about other people. It stopped me mostly caring about myself. And so then my behavior resulted in lashing out, seeking attention, and all of those things.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that, Dolphy. I hear, you know, we're really talking about systemic issues, right? And cultural issues. And we're going to have to wrap things up now. So I'm going to turn this over to Catherine. But really the message is, you know, to move away from disconnection into connection and find out ways to do that right from the very beginning. So thank you both.
Yeah, thank you both. What I'm taking away from this is the signature importance of loving care, which is of course the opposite of what the carceral system gives people. And so if we really want healthy communities, we have to figure our way back to building communities of loving care. Thank you both, Priya and Dolphy, for joining us. You've given us a lot to ponder in Maine. With thanks to bluesman Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series, and to Luke Brown and Aaron Pyle, our sound engineers, we are Justice Radio.
Thanks.